This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to an iFanboy Special Edition podcast, Batman Assault on Arkham.
That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. All day long they're saying,
hey everybody, you're listening to another special edition podcast from iFanboy on Batman Assault on Arkham. My name is Paul. That's Connor.
Hi.
And that's Ryan.
Hola, amigos.
This is the 21st since 2007, you said, Connor?
The 21st full-length release since 2007 from this particular line of films.
Of DC animated direct-to-video features.
There's 22 if you count the collection of shorts that included the longer short, but this is the...
With Shazam in it, yeah.
Yeah, the 21st full-length one.
And this is the first to be sort of directly based on the continuity, I guess, of the Batman Arkham video games, and that's why Batman looks like that.
Well, it's interesting. The let's give a quick spoiler warning. There'll be spoilers if you haven't seen the movie. So they announced when the movie switched over from the pre-New 52 continuity to the New 52 continuity, they announced they were going to do 3 a year. And of those three, two would be in the shared universe that they're all in now, and then one would be out of that. And so this is the first out of continuity one in the video game world. And I've never played either game. I've got no context for
the game. I play the games, and they are fun. they are a good time. I played at least the first two.
Okay, so then is this a prequel?
I don't know. It just means Batman has pupils. He's got what looks like sort of cloudy pupils.
Ryan, have you played the games?
Yeah, I played the first two. I got the third one when it was on sale, but I haven't played it yet.
Ryan, is this a prequel?
Unclear.
Well, okay, the third one...
It has
one...
to be. The second one, okay, spoiler warning.
Yeah, it's...
In the second game, the Joker dies at the end, and it's a pretty definitive death. Like, I believe there's even a body.
There's no such thing for the Joker, Ryan.
But also,
fair enough.
The third and most recent one is like Batman Year Two or something. It's very early in his career.
Yeah, the third game is a prequel. The beginning of the first game is Joker being brought back to Arkham. So I could see this taking place before
this
the
must
events.
Be the prequel. Then they bring it back. Yeah. After
basically, escaped. I think it's just sort of like variations on a theme. It's the sensibility of the video games. It's the character designs. Again, a spoiler, you're going to see Poison Ivy and Bane in here, and they're very on model with the video game. It's
a lot of things are really on model with the video game. I mean, I could, a lot of the scenes in the rooms in Arkham where things take place, I remember from
yeah,
playing.
That's true. I think for me, maybe because they don't even speak Bane and Poison Ivy, like that's all there is to focus on is that character design, and it's a very specific thing.
Was Poison Ivy wearing pants? It was one.
She had a little leaf thong thing.
She stood up, and it looked like she was naked. Anyway, We're stumbling around because this was a rough one. But before we get into the film, staying on the video game, I was surprised two things. One, that they didn't go for more of a CGI look to kind of match the video game.
The cutscenes?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
And two, really surprised in the cover of the box that it wasn't close to the video game. Because if you're trying to rope in fans of the game's been very, very successful, made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they would have gone for a closer art style. I mean, this is it's a nice drawing. It's a comic drawing.
Yeah, it's stylized. It doesn't look like the video game, and it doesn't even look like what this movie is.
I was just kind of surprised. It's like they slapped an image on there in the last second, and
it's almost like if a comic had different interior art than the cover, and they were very juxtaposed. It's a little like that.
And again, let's continue to avoid talking about the film itself by talking about the concepts behind the film. And what's interesting about Batman Assault on Arkham is that Batman is hardly in it, and it's really a Suicide Squad movie.
Yes.
Much like we've had that happen in previous films, have we not? Wasn't one of the Superman-Batman films really a Supergirl movie?
Yes, it was the sequel to Public Enemy. That wasn't it.
Apocalypse.
Apocalypse. The comic arc was called Supergirl. It was the
right. And then and Michael. The next film is Justice League: Throne of Atlantis, which is really an Aquaman movie. So basically, they're finding a way to do these films starring other characters by just branding them with the Batman or Justice League or Superman.
I'm cool with that.
So that was interesting. It was basically 85% about the Suicide Squad.
But if you're a fan of the Suicide Squad, I wouldn't say necessarily to get excited.
Well, explain the plot. Roll it out for me.
You know the Suicide Squad. So you've got Amanda Waller. You've got the Wall, and
She hasn't been in any of the. I haven't played the third one, but she's not in either of the first two games.
I don't believe Amanda Waller has appeared now. And
did she die in this movie?
By the end,
I was reading a magazine, so.
I mean, it's not a definitive. She could be dead, but you know, either way.
Could have just been sending a message.
Could have just been sending a message, exactly. So Amanda Waller brings in a wonderful madcap character montage, bringing in all of these villains. You've got a very weird looking King Shark, who doesn't look like his usual Street Shark self. This is more of a Jaws from James Bond kind
James
of vibe.
Bond, yeah.
Mechanical teeth, yeah, and he has different attachments for it. And then who else have you got? You've got Captain Boomerang, pretty classic Captain Boomerang. Deadshot, Black Spider.
KG Beast, Black Spider,
KG
Killer
Beast,
Frost.
Yeah.
And
is it Killer Frost or is it Icicle?
Killer Frost.
Killer Frost.
Is it?
Okay.
Yeah. I thought it was Icicle at first too, but it's Killer Frost. Icicle a dude? No.
She brings them together to go kidnap the Riddler, who has some, I don't remember why.
He's got a thumb drive in his mark staff. And
oh, it's like the knock list.
Yes.
He's got the list of all the current and former Suicide Squad members. So they go to kidnap him, only to find that Batman's already grabbed him and put him in Arkham Asylum. So they must assault Arkham Asylum to break the Riddler out, or at least to steal his staff, which has the thumb drive embedded in it.
Right.
Apparently, they don't even search the weapons when they take you in. They just throw them in
and
the box.
And also, they have them in, a big, crate in a warehouse.
Name stamped on.
And,
Indiana Jones style.
At one point, Killer Frost... Yeah, it's exactly like that, Raiders of the Lost Ark. And there's one point where Killer Frost just finds Mr. Freeze's gun.
Yeah.
And it's, fully operational. It's loaded. She can just use it. She doesn't have
to
go
and find...
She's
just to charge it up with her...
I think she has to... she's charged it with her power. But anyway, the point is, this was not a good movie. And... coming on the heels of Son of Batman, which was also not a good movie, I'm really quite
there's
concerned.
There's a pattern of not goodness that's
I'm
happening.
I'm quite concerned for the future of this line, just simply because...
I liked it.
No, you didn't.
I did, actually.
Did you?
What?
Okay. I really did.
Well, I'm glad you found some enjoyment.
How you liked it.
It has some neat ideas, I will grant you.
I laughed at a couple of bits. There was a couple of good bits.
I enjoyed that it was actually more of a Suicide Squad movie because I don't necessarily like the portrayal of Batman in the Arkham games. I mean, he's fun to play, but I haven't read any of the comics that are set in that world either, so I don't really know what differences there are with the character. But I wasn't I wasn't excited to see a movie about that version of Batman. And when it ended up being a Suicide Squad movie, I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. And then they kind of like do a 70s heist thing where, you know, there's the very stylized intro to all the characters and they got to pull a heist and they got to go to the Penguin. And I don't know. I dug it.
See, I thought that was interesting at first because it was very stylized in the beginning. And then that completely went away except for one random point in the middle where there was like a shot of all their heads looking at something.
Yes,
I noticed that came back, but it didn't continue through the whole film.
Yeah,
so
it doesn't maintain the sort of like stylized sort of Ocean's 11 kind of thing,
right,
that they set up. And even in those vignettes where she's capturing, you know, and bringing in all of these villains, the music is kind of cheesy.
The music that was the biggest problem I had.
Definitely cheesy, very cheesy, very bad.
Yeah, I thought the music choices were not great, but. But overall, I had fun with this.
I'm glad. But in theory, I think you know, it has some neat ideas. And I kind of like the idea that Deadshot kind of rises up as a sort of anti-hero. He's
they've really been pushing him.
Yeah, it's sort of like it was Deathstroke for a while, and now it's a Suicide Squad, and particularly
for a guy named Deadshot, he doesn't really hit anything he aims at.
No.
Especially when Captain Boomerang is less than 10 feet from him and he's just shooting at him.
Boomerang doesn't really fare well. Nobody fares all that well, but like Captain Boomerang doesn't have that much to do. I think there's a lot of characters here, and they have an uphill battle trying to endear you to those characters.
Yeah, Ryan, I was totally on board with your point of view in the beginning when I realized it was a Suicide Squad film, until I realized that all the characters were flat and boring and nothing was interesting about them.
There's some interesting things, like Deadshot and Boomerang at least have been through this before.
Mm-hmm.
They've been called in by Waller to against their will to perform these operations as the Suicide Squad. But then there's also, and I guess Harley too. And then there's some newbies, so there's different levels of experience with this. And that's kind of a smart idea if you're just throwing us into that. But it gets a bit dull because I wasn't engaged by any of these characters really. They flirted with this weird relationship between King Shark and Killer Frost,
mm-hmm,
where it seems like he has a crush on her and she couldn't possibly bother with that. But then she seems to, you know, have some.
She warms up to him.
She warms. She warms up to him a little bit. And then he gets his head blown off and no reaction. And not in a way that it's like a commentary of like how cold she is, like how callous she is as a criminal, that even though we as an audience thought that they had formed a bond, they didn't. I don't think it was showcased in that way. It's just like they sort of dropped that plot line.
Right.
I didn't have that much to latch on to. I also kind of like the idea that Batman is in it and he's on the side and he doesn't know what we know. And that's sort of rare for
Batman's in Arkham for a different reason.
Right.
Because the Joker got his hands on a dirty bomb, you know, homemade nuclear device, and Batman doesn't know where it is. So he's coming to Arkham to try to figure out where this bomb is and defuse it in time to save
the
city.
You also get to see a little bit of Detective Early when he's talking to Alfred, like what's Harley doing in here, and what, like, that's right. Weird timing that she ends up at the same time. And so, like, you get to see sort of the gears turning, and usually we're a step or two behind Batman, you know, because Batman's usually the protagonist.
Right.
In this case, he's a side character and has his own sort of like B or C plot, and that's kind of interesting.
He's almost relegated to the background like he was on Gotham Central. Like he's in the beginning scene. He's in a brief scene in the middle, and she's for the final act he shows up, but he's not really the focus. It was really interesting. I thought that was really interesting. I thought this was a nice experiment. It was cool to see them try something new with different characters and do a Batman movie that doesn't really feature Batman. That was, I respected that, but I just felt like the execution was really lacking in the same way. I just felt like it was boring in the same way that Son of Batman was boring. I just kept losing interest in whatever was happening.
You know what I mean? And I like the Suicide Squad as a concept.
Yeah.
And I was like, this could be fun. And like I said, I liked the games. So I didn't necessarily have anything against the world. But I know what you mean, Ryan, when you said like this particular Batman isn't, you know, necessarily the Batman that you would want to follow. And, you know, we don't in this. It's a Suicide Squad story. But I just felt like there wasn't a whole lot of chemistry here.
Mm-hmm. I was sad KG Beast was taken out of the scenario so quickly, because I think Julie and I I think Julie and I saw a preview for this, and you see KG Beast and she pointed and she was like, who the hell is that guy? And I was like, that is a fantastic character named KG Beast. KGB, and he's a beast and he's got a weird arm thing, and
did you mention also the NKVD man?
I did not.
Because that is also a character.
No, actually, I think it was we saw him in, we've been watching the Justice League cartoon. I think he does a cameo in one of
KG that. KG Beast was awesome
he's great. Right. We should pitch a new KGB.
But I just felt like execution-wise, it just fell flat. And I think that's
a lot of
them
fell flat when they were executed. That was a...
Right.
That happened
a few times. I think that... welcome to Pun City, everybody. I think that... the problem, and I think we were all cautiously optimistic when Bruce Timm left. A lot of people were sounding the death knell and running for the hills, but we were trying to give this team the benefit of the doubt. But I don't think I've seen much in the way of a personality or a spark in these films since he has left.
Mm-hmm.
They seem very workmanlike, like they're very by the numbers.
And this weird tone, like I don't necessarily know like who this is for. I mean, there's a sex scene in here.
You're getting more adult.
Like,
a bit of cursing, at least for these kind of films. I don't necessarily call that a problem. It's just a weird, there's a weird lack of us of an energy to these movies that has gone away. Now he's coming back for the next out of continuity film, Justice League Gods and Monsters, and we don't know much about that one yet. But so that gives me reason to hope.
Yeah,
he's coming back for a one off. But
I was excited to see that. But it's not, just that one,
as far as I know. But. This doesn't give me hope for the next two. Justice League Throne of Atlantis, I watched the featurettes, the same team, the same writer. And I'm not excited, even though I love Aquaman.
Yeah.
And then,
and then
Batman versus Robin seems a weird next choice, because we just did a Batman and Robin.
And it wasn't.
And it was terrible.
I don't know. And the other thing with this one is just, you know, that setup and like, you know, the reason we don't have KG Beast is because I guess you would fill a similar role as King Shark. And King Shark is the one that they decided to go with. And you need to have one show that there are really high stakes, I guess, and have his head blown off with the, you know, shot collar. So that, like, that's the story reason for doing it. But wow, that's a really interesting character. That would have been fun, you know, potentially to have that character tag along instead of maybe one of the other ones. But then that whole scene where Waller confronts them, I've seen so many movies like this. You know, like Battle Royale, and there's a Japanese movie called Gantz, which is based on a manga, and it's all about like you wake up in a room, and it's like that Saw thing,
right?
You know, it's bad people are your protagonists, and they wake up in a room, and they have this impossible task, and because of the stakes, we are supposed to care about them, but I don't think they have the real estate or the spark to do that here.
I think they would have benefited from a much smaller team. Then you could have gotten to know them a lot more. Not that I would have trusted the writing to give you that, but as it was with all the characters running around, you never really got to care about any of them. I know that Deadshot has a daughter, and I know that Harley Quinn is bouncing between Deadshot and the Joker, and I know that King Shark is into Killer Frost. That's basically all I know. I don't know anything about Captain Boomerang. And I realize there's not a lot of time here, but if we're going to care about these characters we don't know innately, like we innately know Batman and Superman and Justice League, so we don't need to have a lot of character development for them because we know their stories culturally. Most people don't know these characters. I don't know them as well as the other ones, so I need a reason to care about them. You know, their heads might blow up, but I don't really care if they do or not.
I was convinced that the KG Beast was going to be like an LMD type switch, and he was going
to
show up.
You're holding on tight to that KG Beast bit, hoping against hope he would come back.
Yep. I just can't. I just, you know, I just can't believe he's gone.
That might have carried me through a little bit if I had that suspicion.
Paul, what did you like about it? Anything?
I mentioned some of the things I liked about it. I don't know. I thought it had neat, like, theoretical ideas, but it just, I don't think the execution was there to carry them through. Like, instead of just making them a bunch of villains that are all, like, starting from scratch with Suicide Squad, to have some of them have past experience with it, that's a neat idea. So that you build this level, this history between Deadshot and Waller, so that in theory, that last scene where he's got the
drop on her,
from across the way, should hold some weight. But
she doesn't need to worry; he won't never hit her, not from that far. He can't hit anyone, anything. He can't hit anybody anyway. I like some of the Joker stuff, despite the fact that the voice actor Troy Baker was basically doing a Mark Hamill impersonation.
Well, because he had to, because Mark Hamill was the voice in the games.
Right.
In the first two games.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily fault him for that. It was just a little distracting.
Did you guys not like the animation style? I thought the animation style was pretty good.
In this?
Yeah. I thought the character designs were more complex than we usually see, and
no, they I did like that.
Well, and I thought it was good.
Oh, the character designs were right. It's that thing where like the character designs are kind of interesting, but the backdrops that they're played against, there's a bit of a color forms effect where they just feel like characters just placed on a large background that's maybe a little bit too large and a little bit too pristine. Doesn't feel really lived in.
The whole thing has that gauzy look still that's still in these films.
I think that's just to add a level of interest, like to create some atmosphere, because there's not a whole lot of detail to those set pieces.
Well, yeah, it's tough.
I know we're supposed to be saying nice things at this point. What did I like?
When the Joker announced himself and he called everybody bitches, that made me laugh for some reason. what did he say? It's me, bitches, or something? I don't know, but I laughed at that. There wasn't a whole lot. I found myself constantly checking in to see how many minutes were left. And at one point when I found out it was still 45, I groaned.
Yeah, I know. It kind of felt really long.
I thought there was a lot of really good action sequences. One thing they continue to do really well is animate the action well. And I thought there was really good fight scenes. I liked the opening sequence, especially with Batman and the Riddler. I thought that was a good fight scene.
I liked because it showed hints of, okay, we're going to do some interesting relationship stuff when Killer Frost realizes that King Shark needs help because he is afraid of heights, put a blindfold on you and ride piggyback and I'll tell you, go left, go right. And so they have, there's some kind of connection there, but then it immediately goes away afterwards. I liked that sequence in and of itself. I just wish that they'd done more with it. I think it's interesting to have in animated form have that version of Harley where she's a little bit at odds with the Joker, or a lot at odds. I mean, she's shooting at him, but why is she shooting at him? To open up that panel inside his cell, how much of that is I actually want to hurt the Joker? How much of that is I want to give him an escape route?
Mm-hmm.
How much of that is intentional when it just looks like an accident? How much of that is an act? And that's pointing to a more complex relationship. And part of that is satisfying because we've seen so many other adventures with Harley and the Joker, and probably borrowing from that. Like, it gets...
What is their relationship in the movie? I mean, in the video game.
In the game? It's more like what it is in, Batman, the animated series, that... They have, it's this twisted love affair thing. I like that they toned down her costume a bit.
Yeah, that was nice.
The new 52 crazy, I don't know, like it was really out there with the costume, like very like we're this desperation move to trying to make this character look edgy.
Right.
And you don't have to, because her personality is edgy. She's, a loony person.
Right.
But
I'm looking at the box cover and it's like Black Spider. I don't know one thing about him other than he's a hitman, I guess.
They need to have a guy with a similar body type to Bruce, because it's Batman hiding as that character. It was like Black Spider. Like, that's
an interesting choice. I remember him. He is an old character from the 70s. I remember. I probably have a couple of back issues that he's in. I'm looking at the original costume. It's much different than the film, but.
I mean, it's basically it's a meat filled sock character, as they refer to on Lost. It's a character designed to die, and I think in those opportunities where let's take a character that we liked, you know, from out of obscurity, and that's sort of like that's their prize, is they get to be, you know, this meat filled sock. In a movie, like,
which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I thought that worked really well in the X-Men film, the most recent film. But
yeah, that's another example of that. Yeah.
But it's just, you know, he's a character they changed his look, so you wouldn't even recognize him if you read the comics. They didn't tell you anything about him. He was in the background the entire time, and then he's a big plot point when he is killed. The Batman switches costumes with him, so he.
Anyway, I don't think that's that big. It's not that big of a crime to have an innocuous character, especially when you have so many other characters. We're already saying that it would have benefited from having a smaller cast.
Right.
So we shouldn't really clamor for there to be more dimensionality in this character where you don't.
It was another sort of thing on top of, I don't know who these people are or care what happens to them. Like, Harley's the only one I cared about because I know her so well. And it's just I didn't care about anybody in this movie.
And I hope this doesn't come across as us, you know, ragging on this movie, and because we had a lot of love for these movies, you know, for a good while.
This is the first two we've really not liked very vehemently, I think. I feel like.
I think there's
I did not like Green Lantern.
And I don't want to dismiss Ryan's enjoyment.
No.
I liked it.
I did not like one of the other ones. Batman, the Batman anthology from way, 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 way back.
I didn't like the first Superman Batman. Public Enemies? I didn't like that.
Yeah. But like, even those, there were things to like about him. I couldn't really tell you much to like about this movie or the previous one.
Yeah.
Which is a problem.
I agree that the Batman and Son or whatever it was, Son of Batman. Yeah. That one, I agree, did not care for. And maybe, you know, maybe it's because I played two of the three games. Connor, you've played none.
Right.
You played one. So, maybe liking it is directly dependent on how much you're in that world already.
If it works for a player of the game, then it's successful because they're trying to tie into it. They're trying to get those fans. So if fans of the game like the movie because it evokes the game, then good for them.
I was also worried that it was going to be more gimmicky towards the game because there are things about the game that aren't really done in any of the Batman media. There's like a mode you can go into called detective mode where
The
screen changes and you kind of have like an X-ray vision so you can see bones and you can look for clues and highlight various objects. And like, I thought that they were going to do that a lot. But then when the movie wasn't really about Batman, that didn't really come up. So there's only a few instances where Batman is using detective mode, and there are moments in the game where you call in the Batwing and he did that, and there's moments in the game where you string people up from the ceiling and he did that once. So there was enough little like nods to things you actually do as the playable character in the game that, you know, I was kind of, maybe I was kept a little more engaged watching it to see more of those.
Right.
That's an interesting point. I mean, like, that is one of the big visual signatures of the video game series, detective mode especially. And, you know, this doesn't, you know, take advantage of those in any way.
It nods to them, but it doesn't make them central to any sort of premise within the movie.
It's interesting. It's an interesting experiment. I was just really disappointed. I was looking forward to it, seeing what they were going to do, not necessarily the film itself, because, again, not having played the game, when I heard they were doing this film taking place in the game world, well, on one hand, interesting, on the other hand, not really excited because I don't play the game. But disappointing. Really disappointing.
We can end on a more positive note, though, because also this week, theoretically, I don't know if it actually is shipping, but Young Justice Season 1 comes out on Blu-ray.
Right.
So you can revisit that. So I'm looking forward to going back and looking at those episodes because I really enjoyed Young Justice.
Well, I'm looking forward to Throne of Atlantis, despite all evidence before me that because I love Aquaman and because I don't want to get too far deep into this because we'll talk about it when the film comes out, but it looks like there's a lot of cast changes for Justice League.
Yeah.
Some of the more problematic voices are gone.
Somebody mentioned on the Twitter feed that that Alan Tudyk is no longer going to be Superman. It's going to be Jerry O'Connell.
Who sounded really good in the featurette. And then Rosario Dawson is now Wonder Woman. And replacing Michelle Monaghan. And then...
I like Michelle Monaghan a lot. Maybe not the best voice actor.
Right.
So and Rosario Dawson has done. She was in the Wonder Woman one. She wasn't Wonder Woman, but she was. Right. Was she like Artemis or something? She was in the Wonder Woman feature. She's done video games and stuff. So like she, yeah. So that's a good call.
So there's reasons to be hopeful for that one. Although I liked him at first, I still think that Jason Momoa's Batman's a problem. Although he was not in this film, obviously, it was Kevin Conroy returning to Batman, although he probably knocked that part out in about 2 hours because he didn't have very many lines.
How did you feel about those Batman pupils, Connor?
Did not like them.
Did not like them, no.
They weren't as overwhelming as I feared when I saw you talking about them online, but
well, it's just,
you couldn't help but be distracted by them.
I tweeted about that like when I first saw them, but you don't really notice them that much after that. It's like the first appearance of, whoa, Batman has dots in his eyes. And you see that on the cover of the video game, but since you're playing as Batman in the
video
games,
you're looking over his shoulder most of the time.
Right, so you don't really have to experience that all the time, and it's just very unnerving.
It's also a visual way for them to show when you go into detective mode or right. not. Because it goes sheepless for detective mode.
Actually, I could see that being very effective if you were trying to be the actual Batman and scare the criminals. Pupils, very effective on me. I would not want to. I would drop those diamonds. I would put my gun down on the ground. It was very frightening, very disorienting. So, yeah.
So, Ryan, you did enjoy this, so congratulations.
Favorite of the bunch?
Yeah, no, it's not my favorite of the bunch, but I, you know, I sat through it. I only checked the time once, and it was because I had to get to a thing, so it wasn't checking the time because I was bored. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't running late, and I could tell this was running kind of long, and yeah, I mean, it's not perfect, but I thought it was fun enough to be worth at least one viewing, so, you know, you can do that, like, little digital rental thing where you get it for a single viewing or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. Connor, you're still getting these?
Yeah.
Physical release? Okay. Mm-hmm.
I like the whole shelf.
I like the sense of hope. I do like that.
I hope. I have hope. What's that movie?
You're the Blue Lantern of the Animation Brain Trust.
I was gonna say I'm the Shawshank Redemption, but I'll take Blue Lantern.
I feel like we really should keep it within the DC universe.
All right, fine. Although is that I was gonna.
I hope the Pacific is as blue as it has been in my dreams. Yeah.
Right. I hope that for the next film, I hope the Pacific is as blue as it was in my dreams because well, probably the only Aquaman film we'll ever get.
I mean, it's Atlantis. It's probably in the Atlantic Ocean. It's
we should do a
Pacificus.
We should do a special edition on Shawshank Redemption.
I'd be totally down for that.
Ryan, are we going to have a lot of problems with the science of talking underwater in the next show? Or
no, sound travels better underwater. That was one of my favorite things about Mark Waid's JLA Year One was that Aquaman was whispering because he's used to being able to be heard from further away because
water
transports sound.
I remember.
It's a denser media than air, so the longitudinal waves of sound vibrate better. Come on, Connor. It's basic.
Can we discuss why none of the Atlanteans have an accent and or why Aquaman does not appear to have a main accent? We'll talk about that next time. These are all questions, good questions for next time, the next show.
I've taught oceanography, and I have used parts of Geoff Johns' Aquaman run because the science in that was terrible as test questions. What is the marine biologist saying that's wrong in this statement?
Listen, if we do a special edition on Shawshank Redemption, but we refer to it as Arkham, we could do that. We could totally do that.
We could totally do that. I will figure it out. All right, so if you saw Batman, Our Assault on Arkham, go to ifanboy.com. You can comment on that movie there. Hopefully you liked it. I hope there are people who liked it,
yeah.
The thing is, when people often get angry when we don't like something, we hope you do like it. Mm-hmm. Just because we don't like it doesn't mean you can't like it, as evidenced by us allowing Ryan.
No, we're not trying to change anybody's minds. Just, you know, just be honest. That was our reaction.
I will try to change your mind if I'm truly passionate about something. I don't really care.
33 1/3% of us thought it was the best one yet. So,
2 thumbs up, 10 stars.
I don't know how they're going to top it, quite frankly. With Aquaman.
So go to iFanboy.com, check out the commentary on this show. You can also, obviously, listen to our weekly comics podcast, the iFanboy Pick a Leak Shit podcast. Every Sunday, we talk about the week's books. Me and Paul Montgomery and Josh Flanagan sometimes when he feels like being on the show. And we'll be back next time for Justice League Throne of Atlantis, which is listed as a fall release. I feel like we're almost at fall.
That's interesting, yeah. It's not that long. It's not that far away.
That's what it said in the thing. Who knows when it'll actually come out. But whenever it does, we'll be back for that. We'll be back for the Shawshank Redemption.
Are we talking about Sin City?
We'll probably be back for Sin City. We have to talk about these things ahead of time before we talk about it live on the show. Probably. So until next time, I am Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm Ryan.
Were you asleep? What happened?
I was just rewatching the movie. Couldn't wait for a second viewing.
It's not much of a brain trust, I'll be honest.
I trust your guys' brains. Give me water. I'm thirsty. My work is so hard.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.